From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a special look at the crisis in Puerto Rico. New austerity measures face the people of the U.S. Caribbean colony Puerto Rico, already suffering from a poverty rate twice that of America's poorest state, Mississippi, with half the island's people already living in poverty. Puerto Rico's government is, by most measures, bankrupt, burdened with an unpayable $72 billion in debt that the government has accrued through its colonial relationship with the U.S. Unemployment is rampant, with the labor force participation rate at only 40%. 28% of the hourly workers in the country earn less than $8.50, as compared to 2% in the United States. Overall, the country's labor force has declined 10% in the past 15 years, from over 1 million in 2000 to 900,000 as of this past June, symptomatic of a negative trend in the overall population for the island, which has declined more than 7% since its 2004 peak. The gross domestic product has followed population and the labor force lower, exacerbating the debt-to-GDP ratio in the process, which is already over 100%. The island's government has sharply raised sales taxes from 7% to 11.5% in an attempt to raise revenue, putting further stress on an already economically strapped population. And although the country's creditors need the people of Puerto Rico to stay on the island and pay the taxes that will help retire the country's debts, the island is losing population at a rate of about 1% per year. Francisco Fortuno Bernier is with the Movement Socialista de Trabajadores, or Workers' Socialist Movement, and its counterpart, the Union of Socialist Youth. He spoke with Liberation Radio's Sean Garcia about the austerity programs that creditors insist must continue to expand and what people are doing on the island to resist that push.
The situation in Puerto Rico is not separate from a couple of very important historical facts. The first and foremost one is that Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States. The U.S. acquired Puerto Rico in 1898 after the Spanish-American War as a war bounty. And since then, they have basically been in control of Puerto Rico. Although since 1952, there's been a self-governing, semi-autonomous government, which is a colonial government that is, instead of run by Americans, it's run by Puerto Ricans. But it's just a colonial administration, as it has been. And the other fact is that Puerto Rico is a capitalist colony, which has been industrially subordinate to the United States, and its economy has been always an appendix of the U.S. economy. It has gone through industrialization and deindustrialization in the 20th century, and it has been always heavily dependent on the U.S. Market, and since the 70s on U.S. tax breaks to sustain that capitalist economy. And when those tax breaks disappeared in 2006, a real economic crisis began, as there has been no ability by that capitalist economy to provide jobs or a livelihood for most of the Puerto Rican population. So now we are faced with a government that is increasingly indebted. And a population that can't find work in that capitalist economy, and those who can find work find themselves in a worse situation and worse off, with less rights and greater exploitation than they thought they would 15 or 20 years ago. So it's a crisis that's not reducible to the debt problem of the government, as some pundits would have it. It is a true crisis of capitalism and of the colony in Puerto Rico.
And how do you think it ties into the international landscape? You see what's going on in Greece. We see what's going on in different parts of the world. How does it tie into all this crisis on the economic front with the banks and what capitalism is doing around the world?
So it's not really a so far out from the reality of other countries such as Argentina or Greece in terms of the importance of debt and of government debt. It played the role it plays in the crisis. It has a particularity, which is that most of those are sovereign countries, and Puerto Rico is not a sovereign country. Although we see that the development of that of that globalized capitalism in those countries makes them lose their sovereignty to a certain extent, and put them in a semi or neo-colonial situation in front of more developed capitalist countries, as what we see between Greece and Germany, or what we see between Argentina and the United States. And in that way, the situation is similar. But the we cannot underestimate the colonial character of this situation in Puerto Rico. For example, Puerto Rico is not allowed trade with any other country in the world but the United States. So the United States controls it economically and politically to a greater extent than any of these other countries that are facing similar crises. That said, we are facing the consequences of 30 years almost now of a neoliberal project in Puerto Rico, and in the last 10 years of increased austerity measures and a neoliberal response to our economic crisis, which is now transforming into a situation in which the system, the economic and political system of Puerto Rico has nothing to offer to the people of Puerto Rico. There is no prospects that are not increased sacrifices, as the governor called it, or increased austerity, and less rights for workers. So there has been a neoliberal response, an attack against workers, as part of that crisis. Yes, it is very similar to what has been experienced throughout the world, and it is linked to it on another level, which is the level of the debt and of the importance of financial capital of Wall Street in taking decisions that put their interests in front of the livelihoods and the lives of Puerto Rican people, and the United States works to a certain extent, well, to a great extent, in Puerto Rico as an agent of those economic interests, and has always done so. And even in front of the increased suffering of the Puerto Rican people.
Speaking of the governor, can you talk about the different political forces or trends or organizations that are in Puerto Rico and where they stand on this whole crisis?
Of course, there are two main parties in Puerto Rico, which are regime parties, which are colonialist parties. One of them is the governor Alejandro García Padilla is a member of the Partido Popular Democrático, or Popular Democratic Party, which is the party which allied with the United States in the mid-20th century, created the current political status of Puerto Rico. And then there is the pro-statehood party, which is called Partido Nuevo Progresista, or New Progressive Party, which since the late 60s has been the leading force in Puerto Rican politics with a pro-statehood ideology, pro-American ideology, and also a very much more aggressively capitalist project. And they are both of these parties represent the same project. They represent colonial administration, and they represent a neoliberal project for Puerto Rico. Their programs and their policies are not very different one from the other. Their style of governing is, whereas Partido Popular Democrático is a more more prone to governing by clientelism and by giving people some sort of sense that they are being integrated, especially on the left, and by espousing a nationalistic discourse, which is actually a very, very weak and vacuumed of any political content. They are able to strategize the application of neoliberal policies, whereas Partido Nuevo Progresista is much more open, we could say, to just beating people over the head to get what they want done, as was seen in the 90s with the telephone workers' struggle, and in recent years with the student movement in the University of Puerto Rico, where the university was occupied by police and by riot forces. There's a special riot force called Fuerza de Choque in Puerto Rico, which is basically a political, paramilitary political section of the Puerto Rican police, which is also one of the you know, for the standards of the United States, in which we have seen what policing in the U.S. is, the Puerto Rican Police Department is one of the worst offenders in terms of civil rights violations, and we see that in its politicization also, and in its overt use by the government to impose its programs and to persecute leftists, union organizers, or pro-independence activists. So those are the two main parties. Apart from that, there is some electoral parties which are on the left but also marginalized from the bi-party system. The Partido Independentista Puertorriqueño is a long-standing pro-independence party, and it is maybe one of the largest political organization which is outside of the main two parties, but at the same time it is very much demobilized and has not been able, because of different factors and contradictions, ideological and practical, to articulate itself as a leadership for a movement that presents an alternative to the two ruling parties and the American colonialism. There is also another smaller electoral party that has emerged recently, which is called the Puerto Rican Workers Party or Partido del Pueblo Trabajador, which has it is basically an anti-neoliberal platform, although it does not position itself on the question of independence. Mm-hmm. Which means that it presents an alternative in terms of social questions to Puerto Rican workers, but it comes short of presenting an alternative or a solution to the present situation in Puerto Rico. This in a sense is not a coincidence, and it's not an accident. This is by how it was structured and created. This party comes out of the Puerto Rican socialist left, but it's not anymore wedded to the classical demands of the socialist left, which has been independence and socialism for Puerto Rico. Apart from that, there are other smaller organizations, and there is an organization which is a socialist, openly socialist militant movement, organizing worker struggles, teacher struggles, and environmental struggles, or student movement, which is Movimiento Socialista de Trabajadores, of which I am a member, which is an openly socialist organization calling for independence and socialism for Puerto Rico as the only way out of the present colonial and capitalist crisis in the island. These organizations on the left, however, have been weakened in recent years and have faced increasing attacks by the government, and they have also struggled with the situation of the Puerto Rican workers' movement, which is has been historically divided between workers' movement of unions that which are affiliated to international U.S. unions. And therefore, the international unions or the U.S. unions dictate their policy versus an independent Puerto Rican union movement, which has been more militant in its struggle against the government, but which, because it has been more militant, has also suffered greater repression and has also been attacked more constantly for its stalwart defense of workers' rights. An example would be the Electricity Workers Unions, UTIER, or the Teachers Federation, which has even faced been outlawed. Its leadership has been prohibited from teaching ever again. But it, at the same time, it has presented a strong opposition to the government, as was seen in January of this year when teachers occupied the Capitol building in demands over their demanding that their pension funds be defended by the government instead of given to predatory financial capitalists.
So, as a colony of the U.S., you know, why is the struggle for Puerto Rican independence so important for workers here in the U.S. in the belly of the beast?
So, the struggle for Puerto Rican independence and the struggle for establishing a political and social system in Puerto Rico that truly represents the people's interests is not separate from the struggle of people in the United States for those same things. Our both countries and both people's destinies have been unfortunately and by the terrible reality of imperialism being wedded together. Pro-statehood supporters, for example, use the example that Puerto Ricans have fought in all of the United States wars, they feel proud of that. We feel that it has been terrible, not only that the Puerto Rican people have been forced to fight in those wars, but that the American people have been forced to fight in those wars, we have fought for the same workers' rights in both countries, and we, of course, have been subjugated to the government of the United States, but not to the people of the United States, who are fighting the same powers that be, and it is in that sense the same struggle that will recognize independence for Puerto Rico and socialism for Puerto Rican workers. It is the same struggle that in the U.S. would recognize the necessity of socialism for the U.S. workers. And it is in the same sense that we would like to see a truly democratic Puerto Rico. We would like to see a truly democratic United States of America, And we believe that the struggle of Puerto Rico for independence in the context of a world which the United States attempts to lead imperialistically to impose its will on every other country on the planet, that struggle is extremely important, as it shows to the rest of the world that this hegemonic power is not so monolithic, it's not so unbreakable, and that there are inside its borders, if you will, there are differences, there are conflicts, and there are struggles that are putting into question its power structures and its imperialistic and capitalistic policies.
So at this stage, what would you say is the most critical steps or things being fought for right now in Puerto Rico, and how can workers here in the U.S. support and build true solidarity with those struggles?
So I would say that there are mainly three points which have to be stressed. The first one is that Puerto Rican workers and Puerto Rican people must break with the two existing party system in Puerto Rico, which is a colonialist and capitalist party system. And so we have to break with those two parties and develop independent people's organizations which can struggle for the interests of the people. This is an extremely important point, as those two parties serve as a foil for all attempts at change in on the island. We cannot buy the governor's attempt to portray himself as confronting Wall Street. This is a farce, and we have to be very clear that Puerto Rican people must break with these two parties, because these are the two regime parties. These are not the people's parties, and they are not instruments of struggle. We must build those instruments of struggle. The second point would be to deny that the debt which Puerto Rican people are being forced to pay is legitimate. This is not our debt, and it is not only that it is not our debt, but that we should not pay it. We cannot pay it, and we should not pay it. This debt is product of decades of failed economic policies, decades of corruption, and the people who have benefited from the conditions that created this debt have not paid anything back to the people of Puerto Rico. The United States corporations that have taken billions of dollars from Puerto Rico and have exploited Puerto Rican workers are the people for whom this debt was taken on. It was not taken on to benefit the Puerto Rican workers. It was not taken on to benefit the people, and it was the one of the consequences of that of the policies of the last 30 or 40 years has not only been the debt, but the marginalization and impoverishment of a large part of the Puerto Rican population. Today, Puerto Rico lives 41% of the people live under the federal poverty rate, which applied to Puerto Rico gives you a wrong estimate of real poverty, because it is a poverty rate established for the United States, which has a greater economic level and a level of life that is greater than Puerto Rico. An example that is widely cited is that the median household income in Puerto Rico is half of the poorest state in the United States, which is Mississippi. And this social crisis is a reality. It has to be recognized as a reality, and we have to recognize that coming out of this social crisis is not the same thing as redeveloping the capitalist economy in Puerto Rico, because the attempt at rebuilding this capitalist economy in Puerto Rico is being paid for, or is being carried on the back of Puerto Rican workers, and that is what austerity means, and that is what neoliberalism has in mind or in store for Puerto Rican workers. We have to reject the notion that a lower wages for Puerto Rican workers are going to make the economy better, or that the elimination of welfare programs are going to further the cost of Puerto Rico in some way. No, these are actually going to increase poverty and immiserate the population of Puerto Rico. And in that sense, we have to say that the all further development of Puerto Rico has to be done in a progressive way. It has to be paid for by those that until now have benefited from the poverty of the Puerto Rican people. And those are the U.S. multinational corporations that are doing business in Puerto Rico and the Puerto Rican capitalists that have also benefited from this system. Those are the ones that must pay for the development of Puerto Rico and for the well-being of the people. And these three points, I think, are extremely important to begin to question and to begin to propose alternatives. But of course, you cannot talk about alternatives without talking about who is going to implement those alternatives. And in that sense, the most important thing is that Puerto Rican people need institutions, organizations, political spaces for struggle. And from the United States, looking at Puerto Rico, I think that one of the most important things that people could do in solidarity is to look towards those and to put their solidarity in any way they can provide it towards those who are actually doing the struggle, to begin and continue to question the dominant discourse in the United States about the crisis in Puerto Rico, which is geared and seen from the perspective of Wall Street, of capital, and of the federal government, not from the perspective of the people in Puerto Rico who are living the crisis. And once we start doing that, we have to start questioning the news that come, for example, in the New York Times, or Paul Krugman's column on Puerto Rico, which calls for a massive migration from the island. And from and we have to start to question this notion of the debt as it has been presented, because we need the solidarity of the U.S. people in order to achieve what we want. It is not going to be easy, and this struggle is not a separate struggle in the same way that the struggle of the people in the rest of the world is not a separate struggle. And in that sense, we have to call for that support and that solidarity, and to call for it in a way that questions the power relations that exist between Puerto Rico's political establishment and the U.S. Imperialist project. And as part of that, one of them, we cannot go without talking about Puerto Rico without mentioning the plight of one of the most important Puerto Rican militants who has been in a U.S. jail for 34 years now, who is Oscar Lopez Rivera. And we have to remember Oscar Lopez Rivera as who he was. He was a militant of the Puerto Rican independence and socialist struggle. He was a man who gave all of his life to that struggle, but he was also did not do it in Puerto Rico. He was doing it in the United States. He was organizing the Puerto Rican community in the United States in solidarity with the struggle of Puerto Rico for independence of Puerto Rico, and also for the struggle of the Puerto Rican community in the United States in their own everyday problems for housing, for jobs, for appropriate social services. And in that sense, this is the example of what solidarity means in the United States. It also means a struggle for the Puerto Rican community and for other marginalized and oppressed communities in the United States. This is how we can actually overcome the common enemies and the common obstacles we face. We do not do that only by providing solidarity towards the outside, but also by taking on the realities that oppress us in our everyday lives and here. And I think that's the greatest thing we can do, is to struggle in common.
Puerto Rico's government owes creditors about $72 billion, roughly double the debt owed a decade ago, and amounting to about $20,000 for each man, woman, and child on the island. On a per capita basis, that's more than 15 times the median figure for the 50 states as a whole. The government has imposed severe water use rations, and the pension system, with $37 billion in long-term liabilities, is insolvent. So much so that this May, the government announced that its main retirement system had only 0.7 cents in assets for every dollar in liabilities. We will continue to follow events in Puerto Rico as they develop. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.